Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. The New York State Department of Health this week declared Eastern equine encephalitis an imminent threat to public health after an Ulster County resident died of the virus on Monday. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King reports.
The patient, who has not been identified, marks New York's first human case of Triple E since 2015. Triple E is a rare but serious mosquito-borne virus that causes inflammation in the brain. While most people bitten by an infected mosquito don't get sick, it is fatal for roughly one-third of patients who develop severe symptoms. The case is being investigated by the Ulster County Department of Health. Vincent Martello, Director of Community Health Relations for the county, didn't provide details Monday, but he urges residents to take precautions against mosquito bites.
It is rare, and so while we don't want people to panic at all, we do want people to be cautious.
It's been a tough year for mosquito-borne illnesses in the Northeast. The New York State Department of Health says more than 50 human cases of West Nile virus have been reported as of September 14th. Triple E has been diagnosed in horses across several counties so far, and human cases have also been identified in Massachusetts, Vermont, and New Hampshire. Speaking in Plattsburgh earlier this month, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer called this summer, quote, one of the worst mosquito seasons ever for New York.
First, I'm calling on the feds, particularly the CDC, Center for Disease Control, and the EPA, to step up coordination efforts with New York and local officials, including officials right here. Second, I'm pushing the CDC. They have a program called Vector-Borne Disease Program, which New York benefits from, with over $65 million in funding. So we're going to try to get that in the budget right when we return in September. We're going to do the budget, and I'm asking actually for a $2 million increase in the Vector Disease Program. And then CDC can provide assistance to New York State. It's also important for people, of course, to protect yourselves.
Governor Kathy Hochul says the State Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation is working to make bug spray more available at parks, visitor centers, and campgrounds. She says the Parks Department is also increasing signage about Triple E at trailheads and has discussed limiting park hours in affected areas with local health departments. As for protecting yourself, Martello recommends using insect repellents that contain DEET, wearing long sleeves and pants, and avoiding outdoor activities at dawn and dusk when mosquitoes are most active. He also recommends homeowners repair any torn window and door screens and eliminate any standing water in their yards.
And that could be, you know, a bird bath. It could be old tires where water gathers, those types of things, because mosquitoes breed in standing water.
Martello says children younger than 15 and adults over the age of 50 are most vulnerable to Triple E. Despite the name, Eastern equine encephalitis is not spread from horses to humans. Martello says it's purely a mosquito-borne illness, and the best method of prevention is to not get bit. Severe cases often start with a headache, high fever, chills, and vomiting that can then develop into disorientation, seizures, encephalitis, and coma.
We suggest that people, if they do suspect that they've been bitten and they have these symptoms, that they consult their health care provider as soon as possible.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
The Clinton County, New York Health Department recently reported its first human case of West Nile virus. It's thought the viruses are more prevalent across the region this year due to the weather and climate change. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
The health department reported that the individual, who was not identified, lives in Chazee and is over the age of 50. After experiencing symptoms on September 1st, the person was hospitalized and is now recovering. Champlain Valley Physicians Hospital infectious disease attending physician Dr. Keith Collins says most people who get West Nile virus won't get sick.
About 8 in 10 people that get West Nile won't even know they ever contracted it because they won't feel sick. And most people who do get sick just get a nonspecific illness in which they get fever, they get muscle aches, they get joint pains, they get a headache, they may get nauseated, and it will last for about a week or so, and then they'll get over it. About 1 in about 150 will get seriously ill with either meningitis, which is an infection surrounding the brain and spinal cord, even though they feel really sick with that, they will recover from that without any permanent problems. But then there's another group that will get infection of the brain itself called encephalitis. That has about a 10% mortality. And then the final thing, which is probably the least common, is the virus infects the spinal cord itself, and it causes the conditions very similar to polio where people can become paralyzed. That's probably the least common.
Collins warns that the viruses carried by mosquitoes can be transmitted to humans as soon as the bite starts.
Once it pierces the skin with its proboscis and starts feeding, it's going to transmit the virus if it's carrying it. It's essentially something that would happen right after you're bitten.
So by the time you slap the mosquito, you may have been exposed.
Yeah, by the time you're bitten, exactly.
Eastern equine encephalitis is the other viral disease of concern that is transmitted to humans by mosquitoes. Clinton County has reported one case of triple E in a horse, but no human cases have been identified. An Ulster County resident died of the rare disease on Monday. Scientists have found climate change is a factor in the increasing spread of the mosquito-borne viruses. University at Albany Department of Atmospheric and Environmental Sciences Associate Professor Oliver Tim says this season has seen unusual warmer and more humid weather.
I think it's the combination of the warm temperatures and the right timing when it's warm and humid in the season that can lead to both favorable conditions for the mosquito species, which are different between West Nile virus and the triple E, that both mosquito species have better conditions this summer than other years.
Viruses such as West Nile virus and triple E prefer warmer climates, and Tim says anticipated temperatures due to climate change are expected to increase in New York.
One can develop models to predict the spread of these diseases for New York, for the future climate scenarios that we have here, where the temperatures are expected in the coming decades to increase by 3 to 5 Fahrenheit. There are different scenarios, of course, but that's a good average estimate. And when we plug that into our statistical models, we see that the northern parts, northwestern parts of the state enter a climate regime that is more favorable, more optimal for the reproduction rates of the virus in the natural system.
There are no vaccines for West Nile virus or triple E, so Dr. Collins says individuals must take preventative measures to avoid bites.
It's wearing long sleeves, long pants, also using appropriate insect repellents, particularly DEET is one that works really well. It's been proven to be safe. If you are going to use an insect repellent, if you're going to use sunscreen, you want to put the sunscreen on first and then put the insect repellent on top of that. And then there is something called permethrin that you can spray your clothes with, and that even lasts through a few washing cycles.
According to the Clinton County Health Department, the symptoms of triple E and West Nile virus are similar, but triple E can develop into a more serious illness.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. This week, I sat down with New York State Democratic Party Chair Jay Jacobs. The New York State Democratic Committee reelected Jacobs this week as the organization's chair. Jacobs was unanimously reelected by the committee for a sixth term during its biennial meeting. I began by asking Jay for his reaction to news reports that cited former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi blaming New York, and specifically Governor Kathy Hochul and a close gubernatorial race, for congressional losses that helped flip the House in the last election.
Well, you know, I want to answer that. I was involved in that campaign, and I know how hard it was for Kathy Hochul. First, let's understand something. Kathy Hochul, in my judgment, has been a fantastic governor. She's the first governor that's come into office and not only laid out a collaborative approach, but actually practiced it. It's a wonderful thing to see the Democratic leaders in the state Senate and in the Assembly getting along with a governor. They don't always agree, but they work together. It's amicable. They work out their compromises. It's the first time we've seen in recent history that I can remember a New York State governor that has not been at war with the mayor of the city of New York. Again, working collaboratively, figuring out solutions to problems. She has laid out a positive agenda. She's a decent, and I say this having worked for many governors, or quite a few governors anyway, she's a decent, caring individual. She's authentic. And what she's suffering from, frankly, is there have been millions and millions of dollars in advertisements on TV. I got a piece of mail attacking her by special interest groups over one bill or another bill, you know, laying out how terrible it is what Kathy Hochul has done. And when you look at the facts of it, it's completely untrue. But this is what people are seeing day in and day out. And there's been no response to that. So, you know, her poll numbers are going to go down. They'll come back up, by the way. But let me address the Nancy Pelosi piece. And I have a lot of respect for Nancy Pelosi and admire her greatly. But I think that she simplifies and mischaracterizes what happened here in New York. New York was different in 2022 than every other state, in that in New York, the issue of abortion and the fear after Roe v. Wade was overturned, the fear engendered by people did not translate to New York. Why? Because people, and we would knock on doors and you'd hear this from women, don't insult my intelligence, abortion is safe here in New York. That's what we would hear from women. Across the country, you know, 20 states have imposed fairly harsh restrictions on abortion, and other states are considering it, and voters in those states were responding at that time, as they'll respond again, I believe. That's number one. But number two, and most important, people forget, in New York we had this debacle in the redistricting effort, and it ended up in court. And what happened was the new district lines were drawn, and the four Democrats that were supposed to win, or we would have thought they should have won, and that's the whole focus of these criticisms, they were each engaged in a primary. And those primaries happened at the end of August. Republicans didn't have that. I mean, I think Lawler had a very light primary. It wasn't a tough one at all. But other than that, none of them had that. So they had an additional 12 weeks ahead of us. And by the time the end of August came, with only 9 weeks to the election, the bank accounts for these campaigns, the Democrats, were empty and had to be refilled. You couldn't get up on the air. And Republicans were well ahead of us. So, I mean, that had nothing to do with Governor Hochul. You know, I'll give you that we had a tough political environment going on, the Republicans unfairly hitting Democrats on cashless bail, they called it, you know, bail reform is what it was, and mischaracterizing it, and the press wasn't helpful either. But, you know, you could blame a lot of people, but the bottom line of it is that the essence was these primaries really made it very tough on these candidates in tough races. And that's what I think you saw different than across the country. And New York, let's remember something. In that election, we kept the supermajority in the state assembly, supermajority in the state Senate, won every single statewide ticket, you know, including Senator Schumer's reelect and the comptroller and the attorney general and the governor, of course. Yeah, not by as big a margin. And then people also forget that Lee Zeldin, different than any previous Republican candidate against, for instance, Governor Cuomo outspent the Republicans 8-1, sometimes more than that, in each of his elections, re-elections. Kathy Hochul came into office, immediately had a primary, had to raise money and win that primary, and then immediately went into a general election while organizing a government. And then in that general election, let's remember, Zeldin raised, between Zeldin and the independent expenditure groups, they raised almost as much money as she did. And at the end, they had more money than she did because she had to spend a lot of her money on that primary. So you can't just get out there and make a claim like that. I think it's unfair, it's simplistic, it's wrong, and of course I disagree with it. And I think Kathy Hochul's doing a great job, and I think voters are going to see that. They're going to see the character of Kathy Hochul, and I think that's something that Americans yearn for in their leaders, is character. And she's got a tremendous character, she's got strength, but she's also well-balanced in the sense that she understands how to deal with people in an appropriate way and allow them to keep their dignity and don't bring these battles into the public when necessary, and then work out compromises and solutions. And I think that's what you want from a leader. And, you know, for all the governors I've worked with, I have to tell you, she's the best. And I say this in a way that I hope people understand. I've been around the block a couple of times, and I'm always very impressed by what I see in Kathy Hochul and how she conducts herself.
That's New York State Democratic Party Chair Jay Jacobs. listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Indigenous communities have existed in the Adirondacks for thousands of years, but the legacy of colonialism continues to impact the relationship between Native people and non-Natives living in the region today. A group of the young Haudenosaunee educators is working to change that narrative by reclaiming their ancestors' culture through dance.
Helene Gibbons is leading about 20 people on a walk at the Barnum Brook Trail at Paul Smith's Visitor Interpretive Center. She asks her tour group to close their eyes and listen to the sounds of bird chirps and the breeze hitting tree leaves.
And feel or sense how you're surrounded by an infinite variety of life forms.
She even leans into that forest soundscape to get her tour group to circle up.
So usually I call you back with an owl hoot, and it sounds like this.
Gibbons is a nature therapy guide for Adirondack River walking. She leads therapeutic walks known as forest bathing.
Our objective on the walk is to help connect people with nature in a more intimate way, slowing down, using their senses, because when we do, it makes us mindful.
Gibbons' tour group is visiting the Vic for the first ever Adirondack Nature Festival for people with disabilities. The people attending today's festival have a range of needs when it comes to being in the outdoors. Some have visual impairments, others use wheelchairs. So Gibbons says she made sure each member of her tour group had the proper accommodations for the hike.
This trail that we used today is, the section that we used is ADA compliant. It means that it is easy, level, that the surface is free of rocks, ruts, roots, and so that as people who have mobility issues walk on the trail, they don't have to be concerned.
Along the trail, Gibbons talks about the things she hears, sees, and smells. She points out a birch tree stripped of its bark and holds balsam fir needles in her hand for hikers to smell. She says it's something she does for all of her tours, but can be especially impactful for people with disabilities.
It just feels like a more connected, complete experience.
That's Katie Carroll. She traveled from Albany to attend today's festival. Carroll is legally blind. She says the forest bathing tour allowed her to experience things she rarely gets to encounter in nature.
Well, one thing that I know is out there is that there are all these different kinds of trees and different leaf shapes. And I can see the color, so I can tell that there are different like greens out there, but I don't know why, and I don't know that what they are.
So Carroll says having a guide to describe her surroundings is key to getting the most out of the outdoors.
You know, we encourage people to go out in nature and have a walk and all of the good things that come along with being outside and being in nature, and people are going to experience that differently. And so this just means that everyone gets to have a complete experience.
The forest bathing walk is just one of the ways the festival is connecting people with disabilities to nature. There's also bird watching, nature painting classes, and inside one classroom, nature sensory play.
A lot of times we'll put them together, so play yours and play this one. We make a little.
That's the sound of nature music. It's part of an immersive sensory workshop led by Suzanne Weirich. She's inviting visitors to grab pieces of wood, leaves, and shelves off of a table to create drum beats. She says tactile experiences like this can be enriching for anyone.
Every table is set up for a sensory experience. So this is all forest music, for instance. So it's touch, it's hearing, it's smell, it's taste. So all of these different tables intermingle or specify one of those different aspects of the senses.
There are fragrant greens, textured tree barks, edible plants. Weirich says sensory play with these pieces of the forest can give people a new perspective on how they can experience the outdoors.
It opens doors. You know, they might feel a stick under their foot and they go to pick it up and it's like, oh yeah, touching it, feeling it. So it brings joy. It brings you, it kind of returns you to that childhood sense of wonder and awe.
Weirich says closeness to nature is something we all crave. And festival volunteer Minda Briety says it's important that feeling is accessible to anyone.
This festival and these experiences are a way to make sure people, all people, feel included and seen and heard and cared about in the Adirondacks, because that's who we are.
Organizers say the Accessible Nature Festival is the first of its kind in the state. And after a successful first year, they're hoping to make it an annual tradition. In Paul Smith's, I'm David Escobar for the New York Public News Network.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Farmers and fans recently flocked to Saratoga Springs for the 39th Annual Farm Aid Concert. The Legislative Gazette's Aaron Shella Levine was there and filed this report.
The annual benefit concert highlights the struggles small farmers face, from land equity to climate change. Founded by Willie Nelson, Neil Young, and John Mellencamp in 1985 amid the farm crisis, the festival has toured throughout the country since. At a kickoff press conference for Farm Aid's second visit to SPAC, Dave Matthews took the stage with other board members and local farmers.
We know how to do it. We know how to raise meat. We know how to raise vegetables in balance with nature. We know how to do it. We have the technology. We have the wisdom. But the thing that stops us is greed, and it's corporate farms, it's corporate agriculture. What's stopping us from being able to afford homes is corporate greed. What stops us from being able to afford healthcare? It's corporate greed, and it's the fact that our politicians are joined with that corporate greed to serve it before it serves us. We need to serve our planet, and we need to serve each other and connect to it, all of us. Thank you for being revolutionaries in a place where you should just be the most sought after resource of human beings. Thank you.
The gates opened soon after, and the crowds began to rush in. Mary Jo and Mike Baywall were among the first. They drove from Michigan to spend the weekend.
I'm for Neil. I love him, love him.
Neil Young, Dave Matthews. Yeah, we love music. We're concert.
It's all good.
We go to all kinds of concerts.
The festival also features locally grown produce. The couple says they've been to 7 Farm Aids and the food is always memorable.
Oh, the food's fabulous. I know it sounds corny.
The corn.
Last year, the corn was so good. The corn was the best.
It was Mexican corn, actually, that was prepared Mexican corn.
Brian Strubig is manning the grill at the Patchwork Family Farms stand, flipping pork chops.
We got a lot of corporate farms out there, people that are stuck in contract farming, and they need all the help that they can get because they don't have a voice. If they speak up, then they'll lose their pork or their birds or whatever it is that they're growing, and then they lose the farm because everything is all the risk is on them, and the big corporate companies could take all the profits. So
Strubig is wearing a red shirt that reads Stop Factory Farms in white lettering. He says volunteering at Farm Aid is an easy way to grow support for family-owned farms across the country.
Pretty much every small hog farmer saw their entire market disappear. Basically, you're stuck having to sell to 4 companies, Smithfield, JBS, Purdue, and Tyson. If you don't sell to them, then you don't have a place to be able to sell your pork. So we want to be able to stop the big CAFOs. That's where they've got like 14,000 hogs in like one barn. It's not good for the hogs. It's not good for the people. Creates a tremendous amount of waste, and it's just not sustainable farming.
Farm Aid's signature homegrown village houses dozens of local and national organizations promoting organic farming practices and getting locals connected to their foodways. First-generation farmer Rihanna Kim is running her third Farm Aid seed share program.
So the theme this year is phytoremediation, and we're focused on soil cleaning because this area, Saratoga Springs, actually has a sort of a dark history of water and soil pollution from the Industrial Revolution. And so we're focusing on plants that are great soil cleaners. containers. So we have a mustard and we have a sunflower. And when you plant those plants and you pull them out at the end of their cycle, they're going to take up heavy metals and toxins, and you're going to pull those out of your soil and help make healthier soil.
Stephen Drain is one of many walking around proudly displaying a farmer badge. Co-director of the People's Kitchen Community Garden in Philadelphia, he's excited to have a space to raise awareness about food sovereignty and apartheid.
Where I live in Southwest Philly, a fifth of the people who live in the city live in food deserts. And so, you know, our farm, we're interested in bringing really quality produce to folks that they haven't had access to, and just like really get people back in touch with the land. So being at Farm Aid has been really cool because I get to see farmers at all scales of all, you know, ethnic backgrounds and different identity groups. And it's been amazing to just see how many folks are coming out and to see the old timer musicians like still kind of kicking it and advocating for everybody's rights.
Run, horse, run.
Farm Aid was last held at Saratoga Performing Arts Center in 2013 and drew more than 21,000 fans this year. Reporting for the Southern Adirondack Bureau on the campus of Skidmore College, I'm Aaron Shallow Levine.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2439 and join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.